This is the Mobile Home Park Lawyer Podcast with Fur Neiman. If you're looking to generate wealth and passive income in the lucrative world of mobile home parks, you're in the right place. You'll discover solutions to the common legal and operational pitfalls and how to optimize parks to maximize income. Your host is in the trenches. He's a real estate attorney, financial analyst, and mobile home park investor and operator. Now, let's turn it over to Fur Neiman.
Welcome back, Mobile Home Park Nation. Fur Neiman here again today with another episode of the Mobile Home Park Lawyer Podcast. Got a great guest for you today. She's out of Texas. She's been in the business for quite some time, so I'm eager to share her story with you. Please help me welcome my guest, Rachel Hernandez. Rachel, thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much, Fur, for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, well, likewise. So you and I have been talking offline, and you tell me a little more of your background. But for our audience, maybe tell us how you got into this space. I know you mentioned you were in single family, and then you got into mobile homes, mobile home parks, and you got an interesting story. So maybe give us a little more detail.
Sure. Well, I got into the space, specifically the real estate investing space, like a lot of folks. I read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. And so I got inspired to buy and hold real estate for cash flow. But like a lot of people in the beginning, you know, cash was kind of an issue. So I had to build up cash and find a way to build up cash. So I started out in single family homes. I was a bird dog looking for deals for other investors. And then from there, I became a wholesaler, putting homes under contract and assigning my interests to other investors, mostly either rehabbers or landlords. And then from there, once I built enough cash, I was able to buy and hold real estate, single family homes. But there was a point where everyone was getting paid except me. Or if I was getting paid, Ferd, it was just such a small amount. So the mortgage, the bank was getting paid, homeowners association was getting paid, insurance was getting paid. I even at one point brought in property managers, but they even got paid before me. Right. So I was like, there's got to be a way to do this when I get more money, more cash flow out of the deal. So I decided to sell my entire portfolio of single family homes, and I made $200,000 in cash. And then I stumbled upon Lonnie Scruggs' material, Deals on Wheels. And he actually became my mentor. He was my personal mentor. And I just got inspired by mobile home investing. I do have a sales background. So before I got into real estate investing, just like Robert Kiyosaki, I was an account executive for business to business Fortune 500 corporation. So I did have the sales background going in. So I got into mobile home investing, started buying and holding just like what Lonnie Scruggs teaches, and built up my portfolio. Here I am. It is 2024. I've been doing this since 2007. And just last year, I added wholesaling mobile homes to my business. So now I also do wholesale mobile homes in communities and mobile home parks, as well out on land. And my customers tend to be either other investors, park owners, or homeowners looking for homes for their own, themselves. So here I am.
All right, great. So you're one of the few people I know that met the real Lonnie Scruggs. That's great. I know I've read his book, Deals on Wheels, and it's pretty popular. And I think he's now passed, but I've heard only good things about him as an investor and as a mentor. So that's great. So maybe tell me the pros and cons of the Lonnie deals, as they're called, relative to wholesaling homes, which you like better. I mean, obviously with the Lonnie deals, you're buying the homes in a community typically, and then you're essentially seller financing them, where, you know, you get a little bit down payment, you pay the lot rent, the person that lives in it pays you some form of payment that should cover the lot rent and then some, and they're building equity. And at the end of the rainbow, they own the home, and then you're out the home. So you got to do it again. And then the wholesale is what you're tying up a deal and you're wholesaling out to the end investor, and then you charge a fee for that, correct?
Correct. Correct. Yes.
So which of those methods you like better?
I have a love-hate relationship, believe it or not, as a buy and hold investor, because I have so many stories to tell where, just kind of like Lonnie, I took back homes over and over and over again. So if, you know, anyone out there as a buy and hold investor, things come up. Roofs need to be replaced. Tenants don't always tell you what's happening with the home. I had something called a rat house where the tenant, I went through eviction court three times, Ferd, and basically the judge was telling the tenant, if I see you here one more time, you're out. So she was late again, and fourth time out, she left. The park manager called me, said, Rachel, your home is empty. I just want to let you know they finally left. I walked in there, and there were rats in the home. I had to call an exterminator. He told me, Rachel, I have good news and bad news. I'm like, what? He said, well, the good news is that you have a skunk underneath your home. He looked underneath the skirting, but they eat rats. I'm like, really? What's the bad news? Yes. And he's like, you've got a lot of rats in your home and there's a skunk in your home. So he found actually 10 rats in my home, in that one home. It was a nightmare, I'm telling you.
Yeah. Did you salvage the home or did they ruin everything?
No, I actually, well, with the rats, you really have to work fast. So I was, you know, I had to go through different exterminators because I wanted to get the right exterminator. And here's a tip for anyone out there who is going to be dealing with this. Basically, you don't want to use poison because the rats, if they eat poison, that they could actually, they don't die right away. They could actually have the poison in their system, go in the vents and die in the vents. And then you're going to have an even bigger problem from there. So I talked to so many exterminators, I even saw YouTube videos, all kinds of things. You want to trap the rats. So you can DIY this stuff if you want. There's a bunch of YouTube videos online, especially like they love peanut butter, but right, they only come in out at night. But I was like, I am leaving this to a professional. I'm going to have someone get all these rats. And he came out with 10 rats. So I do have a love-hate relationship as a buy and hold investor because I've seen it all. And just going through, I will say it is the community that attracts a certain type of clientele. But sometimes people look really good on paper. They have like a great job. They have a great landlord. But things come up. And in this specific case, her and her husband, they split up, they got divorced. And then so she had all kinds of excuses. We were even in court, in the eviction court. And she was telling a judge that, believe it or not, there's mold in my property. And I said, you never told me there's mold. And she's like, I have pictures. And the judge says, where are the pictures? She's like, I got to find them. There was no mold in the property. So they'll tell you all kinds of things, but she looked really good on paper. So that's a thing. So I do enjoy specifically wholesaling because I'm in, I'm out, I'm a salesperson, and then having that chunk of money coming in. So I made $2,000 in one day on one wholesale deal, and it was a lead from a mobile home supply store. He called me. And it was a business owner who actually had a mobile home on their piece of land. He's like, Rachel, I just need this off my land. I already had a buyer lined up who had land. He already bought from me in the past. This was just last year, Bird. And he's like, I'll buy it. I'll take it. So I made $2,000 on the deal. The seller's like, just give me $3,000. And it was a 1980s two-bedroom, one-bath home. And I think the air conditioning was upgraded. It was in great condition, but he just didn't want it on his land anymore. He was going to build a home on that piece of land. So it was a business owner. Mm-hmm. So I really like the wholesaling. I mean, of course, you always have to go out and find leads as a wholesaler, but I've been doing this business since 2007. I kind of already have that network. It does take time. The buy and hold, it really is good to have some kind of income because I do still have properties on buy and hold in communities. So I think you should have both. The active income and the passive income. We all hear about passive income, but right, I think active income is really underrated as well too. And it also helps keep up your skills as well too.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I've not done a lot of the wholesale on myself. I did a single family back in the day, but we buy from homes from wholesalers, you know, periodically. So how do you find the end buyers and how do you find the original people that you buy from? And then how's that conversation go? Do they know you're wholesaling it for a fee or is it more like, no, this is, you know, it's just kind of a hidden process. I'm curious how you do that.
Sure, no problem. Well, in terms of the leads, I network. So I know a lot of the mobile home dealerships in the area, and I go straight to the manager because the manager has a team. And so his team comes up, well, this person wants to buy a new home, but they have a used older mobile home that they need to get rid of. And I've actually done, believe it or not, I've done presentations where I've brought donuts for the whole dealership and had a whole presentation at their sales team meeting. And this is what I do. And if you have anyone, because all they care about for it is the commission on the new home. They could care less on the used home, you know? So it's just kind of, because they always tell me we are in the new home business. We are not in the used home business. So I'm talking about big dealerships, Clayton, Palm Harbor, Titan, all the big ones, right? The big ones. They could care less about the older used homes. But at the same time, it's really important to have a good relationship. I do it specifically with the sales managers because the sales representatives, they come and go. They may not be working there anymore. So I've had it where like I had a sales representative, I've been working with him maybe for a year or two and he's not there anymore. I eventually get to the manager who's been there for a while, but they have people calling looking for used homes to buy using cash to be putting on their land. A lot of them is homeowners, sometimes investors too. So they have an ongoing list of people who are calling all the time because when people think about mobile homes, they just go and call the dealership, you know? Right. So yeah, that's where I come in.
No, I think it's good to work with the retailers and the managers. I've found that it depends on the market, whether or not they're receptive. I know when I first started, we went to the sales manager and said, hey, we'll give you $250 for a referral. And they're like, no way. And then we got a couple of leads. And then I remember another time I was at a park and there was a guy who was a transporter installer who lived in the park. And I said, hey, and by this time I knew the price had gone up. I said, hey, we'll give you a significant referral fee, anywhere from $2,000 to $5,000 for every home you give us. And he just looked at me and kind of laughed. He said, the park down the street pays 10. I was just like, wow. And he didn't even own it, just to drop it off. So, and I've also had some dealers give me homes for free, just especially the really older ones, like, you know, 1980, they'll be like, hey, we need a place to dump it. Do you want it? And I'm like, let me look at it. I'm like, yeah, then I turn around and put $5,000 in it and sell it for 10 or 12. I'm like, yeah, I'll take this home for free. Then I actually bought a park from a guy that had a transport business, and he worked for these retailers and he'd tell people, I'll demo your home, but you need to pay me, you know, $3,000 a piece, you know, $1,500 for my labor and $1,500 for the dump fee. Well, he never went and dumped them. He had an old park and he just put them in his park and he set them up and he just left them there. So I bought the park from him and it came with 26 vacant park owned homes. And I said, do you have the titles? And he pulls out a box with like 55 titles in it. He said, pick 26. I'm like, oh, wow. But I mean, that was his business, was just tell people he was dumping them. And he just bought these old quasi abandoned parks and just stuck them in the land.
That's wild. I've never heard of that. That's wild. Yeah, I do agree. I guess, I mean, I'm a local investor and I know you're more nationwide. So I do agree. It could depend on the market and the area for sure.
And how do you find, so your end buyers are that you're selling them to individuals or selling them to parks typically?
A lot of times they are actually either investors who have their own land, or I've had parks ask me like, what do you have? But a lot of times they have really specific specifications, and also year and age and all that. Right. But a lot of times also homeowners as well too. So it's either people who have homeowners who have their own land and they've got an old single wide, but they want a newer used home. They don't want a new brand new home, but they just want a newer used homes. I just closed on one a couple of weeks ago and it was a double wide. And they wanted a newer used home. And it was funny because that was basically the seller was the manager of the park, which is super crazy, but he was ready to just downsize and get into an RV. So I helped him sell his double wide. And then these homeowners, they actually just had a piece of land. They had an older single single wide on their piece of land that they were just going to give to a family member. And they wanted this double wide. It was a 2000 double wide. I sold it for $40,000 and I made about $6,000 wholesaling the home. And, you know, the seller, he made the rest of that as well too. So it was great. It was a great deal. Just smooth, you know, personal property, just the home itself. Nice. And everyone was happy. Everyone was happy.
Good. Now I've worked with wholesalers and some of them will actually buy the home, have the title and already have paid the seller, where others will just be like, hey, I've got rights to it and they have it under contract. They haven't closed yet. And then I've seen others that are more like your bird dogs where there's like, there's a lead over there, you know, wire me the money and then I'll give you the lead. How do you structure yours? And do you include the transport services or is that on the end buyer?
Sure. That's a great question, Ferd. I actually am very upfront with the seller and the buyer on both ends. And I think this is where a lot of wholesalers, it gets tricky because sellers just don't want to trust investors. That's the thing. And I tell them, I was like, look, this is what I'm going to do. You tell me how much you want the home for. And he tells me, okay, I want 30,000, right? I know the home can sell anywhere between, okay, 30,000 is a low end, 30 to 40,000, right? So I tell him, listen, if I can find a buyer and help you sell this home and you don't have any closing costs, your buyer will call, you know, just to transfer the title and all that, right? And they'll pay their own moving costs. It's not a commission. Basically, I'm making money on the spread, okay? And I do the market analysis and everything, and we go back and forth. Would you be cool if I made money on top of what you want? If you want 30,000, if I find a buyer who's willing to pay 35 and I made 5,000 on the deal. And a lot of times they'll say, yes, I even sweeten the deal for it. I say, you're not tied to me. You can go out and find your own buyer. And if you find your own buyer, then just send me a text or give me a call, right? And just say, Rachel, I found my own buyer. And then there's really no question, should I work with Rachel or not at that point? Yeah. But a lot of times people, they don't want to go through. I mean, this last deal, the park manager, he was almost 70 years old and he didn't want to go through showing the home, fixing up the home. You know, there's the paperwork. And now we are going to do a deal where he's going to actually be a bird dog with me. We may be doing some JV deals because he knows other park managers and other parks and sellers, where if there's someone who needs help selling their mobile home, he's like, I'm just going to refer it to you and we can and you know, I said, I'd be happy to just share it with you. You know, we know each other, right? Yep. And share, you know, what I make. And he's like, that's fine. So yeah, right now, that was a couple of weeks ago. He's just getting situated in his new RV, but we're going to get together and that's going to be a new source of leads for me. So yeah, in the beginning, it is hard to find leads as a wholesaler, but once you get your network out there, and that's what I do, then it's just a constant source. But I'm upfront. So basically, to answer your question, I put it under contract and basically as if I'm buying the home. So I said, okay, you want 30,000, but I'm telling you, I'm going to find a buyer for this home to make money on the deal. You can get out of working with me if you want, you know, just send me a call, just give me a call or send me a text, but I'm going to be making money on the deal. Once I find the buyer, I said, okay, how much are you going to pay for it? 35. Then we just get to the closing table and the seller's like, okay, he gets 30, I get 5. A lot of times the buyers don't care. As long as, you know, I'm honest, I'm upfront, and that's it. You know, I'm not gonna, you know, hire the price once we get to the closing table. What we agreed on is what they're going to pay for. So like Lonnie Scruggs taught, it really is a people business. So I think if you treat your business, you know, honestly and ethically and morally, then people appreciate it. And it's great for repeat business in the future. So.
Got it. Now, do you prefer buying homes that are in a park or buying a home that's out in the country somewhere?
Sure. That's a great question. Actually, as long as it's within my radius, I don't really, you know, it doesn't matter to me, you know, there is the driving and then, you know, there's terrain when you're out in the, on a piece of land. I actually did get stuck in a ditch one time in the beginning of my mobile home investing career Ferd looking at a home on a piece of land. And it was funny because the seller, he was giving it away for free, but it was a total, it was a disaster. It was like complete gut everything. I was like, I can't take this. He's like, when you back out of the driveway, now this was on a piece of land, just go straight backwards because you don't want to fall in that ditch because everyone does that. There was a ditch on the side. Unfortunately, I did that, and because I was turning, and he's like, oh my goodness. He got his truck stuck. I don't know what it was, a hook. And he's like, okay, now you go forward. I'm going to pull you, but do not hit my car. He pulled me out of a ditch. So that's the thing. But now I do have a truck. So I know it's not the best for gas, but I do have a truck for the business. So
yeah, I actually had a home one time I bought. It was a guy lived in a two-bed, two-bath home out on this nice-looking farm, and he built this big mansion behind it. He took him like 2 years. He built it himself, and or him and his construction company, and then he wanted to sell the mobile home. It was right in front. I said, he's wanting to get rid of it then. I said, that's fine. So we agreed on price, and it was like $7,000, and it looked like a great deal. And this is the lesson learned here was I didn't at the time think about aftermarket siding or roofing. So I got a bid from a transporter. He went out and looked at it, and he said, I can't haul this home. It's got three layers of roof on it and it has aftermarket siding. So it weighed twice as heavy as it should have been because I'm not going to pull it. So I ended up calling like five or six more guys. Finally, I got a guy that would do it, but he made me weld on additional framing and beef it up. So luckily I had a guy on my team that knew how to weld. So we did that. Well, then he came out and he said, all right, I'm not going to pull it unless you put a new roof on it. So I was like, you gotta be kidding me. And I had no other options. So I told the seller, I said, I have to replace the roof while it's in your yard. So I take a dumpster out there, take three layers of shingles off, re-roof it. Well, in the meantime, it had rained a bunch. So my guy came to pull it out and he got stuck in the mud and he just tore up this guy's front yard. So, and I had a crew of guys there for like 10 days between doing all the roofing and the welding and the transport prep and then try again and try again. But, I had a very upset seller. I was like, I can't do anything. He's like, get this thing out of my yard. And it was like, we finally did. And the guy got stuck in that another home where the guy, it was like a little bit of a dip and he tried to go over it instead of like taking the long way and he bottomed out and the home was suspended over this dip. And he had to go get it's called a platypus, like a special translift and move it out of the way. But then he could put it back on flat ground and then hook it back up to his truck. And it bent the frame and all kinds of stuff. So,
goodness.
I've had a couple times where transporters have ruined a home and we had to get just an insurance claim on it. So, definitely, transport's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, I actually tell people because people have contacted me, you know, I'm moving a home, Rachel. Any tips? Always get trip insurance. You need to know the specific date. I use Foremost that. You know, it's worth it to pay that, but they need the specific date once the home is going to be moved, just in case anything comes on. It's funny you're talking about equipment, Ferd, because that home that I made $2,000 in one day on that piece of land, the buyer that I had, who is an investor with his own land, told me he had to pay $1,200 on top of the move to his mover because it was a really tight turn to get it out of there. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. And he's like, yeah, it's because my mover has to use a special equipment to make the turn. So there's a lot, you know, with moving mobile homes. I've done it in the past and there's a lot involved. I mean, once you do a couple, it's nothing, but you know, you never know what's going to happen for sure.
Maybe tell me a few more, maybe some tips or some lessons learned for people that are trying to do the same thing you're doing. I know you mentioned before you're in a Texas area. So I think one of the things you've been able to do well is know your radius, you know your geography you want to handle, and then focus on the relationships and networking in that particular submarket. What other lessons learned or tips can you share with our audience?
Sure. So if anyone wants to do what Lonnie Scruggs taught, working in communities, the first thing that you want to do is actually get to know the park managers, get to know the park owners of these communities, introduce yourself, because it doesn't matter if you find a great deal. I found a deal for like $3,000 when I first started. I talked to the sellers first before talking to the park manager. And the park manager, she just would not let me work in that park. And so, yeah, it was a great deal. But I was just starting out. I didn't have the network to move the home. You know, you've got to get to know the people who are actually working in the business. So in any type of community, you need to get to know the park manager, the park owner first, if you're going to be, you know, working in that community. In terms of wholesaling, for anyone who's interested in wholesaling mobile homes, it really is, just like Lonnie Scruggs said, a people business. So the best thing, you know, for me is really networking. Networking will get you ahead, you know, above everyone else. And it's not that hard, because people want to know who do they have to call, you know, if they do need help to sell their homes, you know, or, you know, they'll talk to the park manager, because, you know, Ferd, when people are moving out of these mobile home parks, they have to give a 30, 60, 90 day notice to the park. So the first person who gets to know who's moving is actually the park manager or the park owner, because they have to put it in writing. So, you know, other than that, I would just continue to educate yourself, listen to podcasts like Ferd's, read books. If you want to get into mobile home investing, Lonnie Scruggs has a book. I also have a book called Adventures in Mobile Homes, How I Got Started in Mobile Home Investing, and how you can too. And just educate yourself. But from there, learning the market is key, because I cannot tell you how many times people, they think they have a great deal, but they're not sure because they haven't learned the market. If you take the time to learn the market, then you'll know what a great deal is when it comes across your desk. And I don't think I mentioned this, Ferd, but when I first started, I looked at 200 mobile home parks in my radius.
Oh, wow.
So I did a lot of driving, and I met with a lot of sellers, and I met with a lot of park managers and owners, and everyone, I'm telling y'all, has a different personality. So just because you don't click with one park manager or owner in one area, you may click with someone, just like Ferd said, it really depends, you know, when you're networking, when you're meeting with these people, how, you know, the rapport goes on their end. So people are people. We all have different personalities. So that's some tips I can offer.
All right. Well, good stuff. Yeah. I mean, definitely people business. I mean, I would say as a park owner, where I wouldn't be appreciative of wholesalers if they pulled homes out of the park. I've had guys and gals wholesale homes in the park, but it's when they try to pull them out that's when it gets more hostile. And in our leases, we have a right of first refusal, so that if, you know, if you were to try to buy one in our park, we would ask you, are you going to move it out or not? And if you say, yes, I'm moving it out, then I'm more likely to match the offer and buy it to keep the park in there. It depends on the lot. Sometimes if it's a home that I don't care for, it's older and rougher, I don't mind letting it go as much. Or if it's a high demand park with good size lots, I know I can backfill it. But some parks, I mean, one park in particular, I only had a 40-foot lot. I had like 50 feet with 10-foot fire code setback, so I only had 40 feet to work with, and it was really hard to find a 40-foot home. And I didn't want to buy a new park model. I just want to buy a used home. So we looked for, you know, hundreds of leads on that home before we found it. And this is in a high dollar lot rent market, so each occupied site was worth like $80,000. So we really wanted to get that lot filled. But if you were to buy one of those, I wouldn't take it out. I'd be really, really frustrated at it. So if you want to have a good relationship with the park owners, you know, bring homes in, go buy them out in the country, bring them in. We'll give you 6 months free lot rent to get them fixed up and get them turned around and sold. So I think collaboration can go a long way here.
Exactly. And that's one thing with the park owners who've talked to me, they have specifications and they have to be those smaller sizes too, which makes it really challenging. You know, the other option, you probably know, for some park owners have put RVs in there as well too, depending on the market. But I'm seeing a lot of parks. I mean, this is more the big parks, because I do tend to work more in corporate owned parks, that they actually want new homes in the parks. And the people who've been living there for 20, 30 years, they're like, you got to get a new home. And so I'm working with a couple managers, and they're telling me, no, they've got to, you know, there was one, and they, she's like, you guys either got to get a new home, like brand new from Palm Harbor, or you got to leave the park. So I helped them sell their home, and they were going to get a home from Palm Harbor, but I guess they decided not to, and they just left. So I am running more into that because the park wants to raise, and I understand, raise the value of the park in terms of if they're going to refinance or resell down the road. So I'm running into more of that in my experience. So I can see both sides of everything. So.
Yeah, no, I've seen there's actually a park nearby where I live, and we had a park nearby that we recently sold, but we brought two homes in from a different park, and the guy, the bird dog that found them, is like, hey, they're coming from this other park. And I was like, I'm not going to tick those guys off. We're not taking those homes out of there. He said, no, the manager said you can have them. And one of them was free. It was like a 1989 home for free. They said, you got to move it up. I'm like, of course we're going to move it. And I didn't really believe him at first. So I had, you know, one of my managers call and say, hey, we're looking to bring these homes, take them out of your park and put them in our park 5 minutes away. Is that okay? They said, yeah, we're just going to bring in a brand new home. We don't want the 1980s. And this was a really top-notch property. I mean, 500 sites and, you know, single wides and double wides that were all pristine. So they're like, yeah, we don't care. Take the older ones. We're like, our park was kind of, you know, more rough and tumble. Like, this is a decent home. We'll take it. I mean, it was safe enough to transport and everything. And but we actually coordinated with the other park to take their used inventory off their hands.
I believe it. That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah, you can make money on either way. You know, I think just a lot of these, you know, parks that do that, they just want to just raise the value of their park, you know, get it appraised. I don't know what they're doing, refinancing. Of course, it's going to raise the tax value as well, too. So really depends on the park owner for sure, you know. So I see it all. Yeah.
Well, great. Well, Rachel, this has been great. Where can people find you after this episode? How can they reach out to you?
Sure. I have a website, adventuresinmobilehomes.com, where you can learn all about mobile home investing and my background. I also have a podcast, so I'm a fellow podcaster as well, too. And the name of the podcast is Adventures in Mobile Homes. So that's where you can reach me. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out anytime.
All right. Thanks, Rachel. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Ferd. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Mobile Home Park Lawyer Podcast with Ferd Nieman. Ready to learn more? Go to www.themobilehomelawyer.com for free resources and materials to help you succeed. If you love the podcast, go to Apple Podcasts, give us your review, and subscribe today. Thank you for listening. Neither the Supreme Court of Missouri nor the Missouri Bar reviews nor approves certifying organizations or specialist designations. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.